Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Logan Stanley, rolling with the punches. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend and a husband who always supports his wife shoveling, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, Vaughn?
Hey, Mike. I'm doing okay. I mean, today was a long work day discussing the issues such as COVID-19, inflation, interest rates, and the debt-to-GDP ratio. So I'm really, really ready to talk about something that brings happiness to my life. However, we're going to talk about the Winnipeg Jets instead.
Oh, there it is. Good for you. You're not enjoying not only your job, but the whatever this is. What is this called? The polar vortex? This terrible Winnipeg weather, and it makes me question my parents' decision to stay here even more than a week. Like, it's polar vortex sounds like a Nick Cage movie.
It is a frozen hellscape this morning as I was driving out to get my coffee, and I was wondering, like, what did our forebearers, like, their decision-making has to come into question at some point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as different as today may be, it's not going to be that different to the way it was 60, 80, 100 years ago. Like, their bad decisions are saddled with us. Yeah, exactly. It's like the Simpsons episode. We were born here. What's your fault? Like, that's the only...
What's your excuse? I remember that one.
Yeah.
That's it! Back to Winnipeg!
Yeah, so... the little things we can find in our lives that bring us joy are super important. And the Winnipeg Jets have not been providing a lot of those of late.
No. So we'll jump into it. We do have, this is a bit of exciting news, Vaughn. We have an actual sponsor, and we're probably the first podcast to tease a sponsorship read, but we're going to do that later in the show. But we're all grown up. We got our big boy pants on.
First Mining Gold has time and time again.
For sure. Sorry.
Delivered for us. We did each receive a hat sometime last summer. And then our wonderful friend, Dan Wilton, came forward with some amazing Christmas gifts that were slowly turning into better
sounding audio
infrastructure, yeah. Better sounding audio for the podcast. So we started lightly, but now, you know, Face Off Hockey Network, who have done an unbelievable job,
yes,
of building their brand and expanding their brand. And we're going to ride those coattails because I've been looking for coattails to ride for many years and have been unable to find it. If this is it, let's go.
Let's do it. Okay, check-in time. Well, it's been a while since our last one, but the Jets actually have only played 3 games in this COVID mess. And we went 1-1-1. And I was going to break out the tried and tested and true good, bad, and the ugly. But both the Washington game and Nashville, I couldn't really categorize either one of them definitively into bad and ugly because they're both a bit of both. And some good sprinkled in there. But the game against Detroit, all signs were promising. And I penned an article for the FHN, you know, singing the praises of Dave Lowry in a small sample size and highlighting some of the changes that I thought the... on an organization and personnel level that had been made that I thought perhaps had been deemed effective, and, you know, pointing out some of the things that perhaps Lowry's long-term vision that he might look to do. And then summarily, we Washington-Nashville game, we're back to the doldrums. And so that article has not aged well.
Well, you know, the Jets over the course of those 3 games have been like the weather. They've been all over the place. You know, the Detroit game was superficially pleasing in the sense that we won. It's been a little time now, so I do think it was 3-0.
Yeah.
For me, Detroit had far too many opportunities and shots on goal. I mean, this was a team that was outshot, I believe, 20-0 against L.A. about a week or 10 days prior to that game. They've really struggled this year, and for my liking, the game was very competitive, which isn't a bad thing on its surface, but the Jets weren't able to impose their will on a team they really should have been able to impose their will on.
Yeah, fair.
And so it was a good outcome. Very pleased to see Hellebuck get the shutout. And, you know, pleased to see that we won 3-0. But at the same time, it left me a little bit underwhelmed.
Yeah, I was excited just for the new faces. We, you know, both injury and COVID-related, we've had some absentees in the roster. And getting to see Sandberg and Chisholm and Perfetti, obviously, was exciting. And I thought they acquitted themselves pretty well. Chisholm especially, the advanced stats love him. And he looked spry out there. And obviously, in true Jets fashion, we'll never see him again in an NHL uniform. But yeah. Sandberg and Perfetti have managed to keep their spots. And we can get into it now or later. But both, like you would expect, have had ups and downs. But definitely both players belong on an NHL roster. And I have some specific thoughts about Perfetti coming up in the pre-boarding announcements. But how do you think the young guns have fared?
I think pretty well. And it's very confusing in the sense that when others have been given that opportunity and performed similarly, they've been removed from. Like, I don't know what the criteria is.
No, neither do I.
To keep someone in and out of the lineup. Sorry to raise my voice, but we'll get into it when the Capitals game. You know, Stanley was terrible. And we're fed this BS about internal competition and accountability. But it's not, it's just random. You know, honestly, if they just flipped a coin every time a decision had to be made, like, I don't know what they're basing these decisions on. Is it advanced stats? I don't think so.
I don't think so
either.
Is this
where they're born? Maybe.
It's height,
Vaughn.
You know,
it's height. It's height. Well, Perfetti. He's not a tall guy.
Oh, right.
But my point is, you're right. Chisholm, I believe, was the better player than Sandberg.
Yeah. Thank you.
But Sandberg stayed in the lineup over Chisholm. And they couldn't get Chisholm out of town fast enough.
Really? Yeah, they like literally picked him up at the outside the game and said, well, you're good, son. We prefer to have Logan Stanley's terrible 13 to 17
well,
minutes in
I
here.
Think he was standing beside that coach from Florida getting an Uber after the game. They got him out so quickly. Who was that? Gerard Gallant.
Yeah.
No, which isn't to say that the difference between the two was so, you know, profound that I'm dumbfounded that Sandberg is still in the lineup. And he may, in the long run, have a higher ceiling than Chisholm. So if you're saying, listen, if they're about the same, roughly the same, you know, level at this point, and we sincerely project Sandberg to have far more long-term potential, we're gonna run with Sandberg while there's that hole in the lineup. But here's the thing, like, I mean, it hasn't been the back end that's been the problem.
No,
in the last
you're right.
Three games, I don't think. They were in to the lineup quite seamlessly. And, you know,
yep,
honestly, the person I continue just to notice, first of all, I don't know if DeMelo even plays a shift. And that's a good thing.
That's a great thing.
You
that's,
know what
that's
I mean?
That's his bag.
I don't even notice him out there. And sure, you notice him when he screws up. All defensemen are going to screw up now and again. And he's not, like, he's not a Hall of Fame player. He's a very good player who I never notice out there. And that's such a good thing.
Yeah.
I notice Stanley every moment he's out there. And, you know, it's just a looming disaster every moment that he's on the ice. So I don't know what a criteria is being at play here. I thought both those guys acquitted themselves very well.
Yeah.
If they were in our, like, I'm not, like, how is Dylan better?
Well, that was my next. That was my next point and thought. A bit of a thought experiment. We both of us lauded the Jets for the off-season acquisition of Dylan and Schmidt, and one game sample size. So let's all cool our proverbial Jets here. But did we need to? Again, I don't. I preferred Chisholm and even Sandberg's the multiple games. There no noticeable difference to me between them and Dylan. I heard some folks on, I saw some folks on Twitter saying, oh, we could have used him in Nashville because they're a bigger, grittier team. Well, yay. You know what I mean? That's one game, and time would tell if that was going to be borne out.
But Dylan hasn't brought that all
no,
year.
No, he hasn't.
And I will continue to say, listen, I give Chevy and the Jets full credit for bringing those. That's what they're supposed to do. Whether those things work out or not, there's always yeah. some risk associated with bringing a player in. Especially players like that who their team, who knows them very well, think, well, maybe their actual output isn't exactly what their reputation is, right? You know, I don't think either Schmidt or Dylan have lived up to my expectations. I think Schmidt has been fine, a little chaotic at times, but Dylan has been far more underwhelming.
Yep.
To me than Schmidt has. And I think he's far more easily the guy you can pull out of the lineup to replace by one of these young guys, you know, than Schmidt. I mean, I think we have a somewhat, listen, our defense isn't overwhelming, but we have some depth there. Some very decent and credible depth.
Good and young, there. Yeah.
Good and young. We're in a bit of a pickle there. We can't even get Villahanela into a
right.
lineup. I think we need to package something and get something because we have a lot of really good NHL-level people that aren't playing at this stage.
Yeah, and you pointed it out that we did this already with Nikku, is that we brought him in for 8 games a season for 2 seasons, never really developed him, and then shipped him out for a bag of pucks. And it's like, if the intent is that Halen is just not going to get NHL ice time, let's get an asset. We did that with Patan. There's example after example of young vet players, regardless of whatever you think their play level is, but they have value. And we yeah. run that value to a minimum and then get rid of them, which obviously, you know, doesn't take a genius. Buy low, sell high, right?
Well, right. We're not managing our assets very
right.
well.
That's it.
Like, listen, if Villahanel isn't our cup of tea as an organization, all right, I get it. I disagree, but I get it. But let's not just grind him into the dust until he's nothing to prove a point to which I will never understand.
Yeah, at what point, like, would that be, right?
I don't understand why. Like, Samaniki was AHL Defenseman of the Year, and we've ground him into basically nothing. Like, that is mismanagement, and we are on the precipice of doing that again with someone who wasn't born in North America. So I don't know. There's a vast we've touched upon this in previous episodes where there seems to be a vast disconnect between the assessment of talent and what talent is, and the application of talent when it actually arrives in a game jersey and is applied on the ice. So I do think that there was a lot of good discussion points that arose from the Detroit game. I think as we move to the Capitals game, you know, it was an interesting game.
Yeah.
That game, and I think you'll like this analogy, Mike. You know me,
You are an analogy master.
Yeah, I like analogies here, and I have one for this game. Watching this game was kind of like having sex with me. The first 2 minutes were kind of fun, but then it's followed by a couple hours of awkward back and forth. Then just as things look like they're going to get better, it all collapses and you're left feeling disappointed and like a loser.
Oh my God.
That just happened.
There's a 70% chance I'm editing that out.
Come on. That was good. I worked
75
on that
maybe.
I worked on that for
I can tell.
Days.
I can tell. It was well executed. And you landed the plane, because when you started off, I was like, I might leave. I'm not sure I can finish this. But you're right. It was all over the map. And, you know, we track, I know both you and I are fans of the high danger chance yeah. stat. And, like, there were, I think they needed to invent a stat called, like, ludicrous chances. Because there were just, on both sides, more so on the Washington side, but, you know, just like Spaceballs, there were ludicrous amounts of really prime scoring opportunities. Both teams weren't really focused on the defensive end. And I don't know about you, and this is, you know, we tend to get a bit hazy in our ability to see beyond the Winnipeg Jets and their troubles and struggles, but it seems to me like, especially in the Nashville game, we're suffering for some bad puck luck. Like,
yeah, you know, people say that is an excuse of the week, but I don't understand. I agree with you, Mike. It's just like, what is going on? Like, these goals that are scored against us is like, how is that possible?
And scenario, it'll bounce, but it'll go wide. Like, that one goal in Nashville, I think it was their third. You could take that shot 100 times. I think it only would have went in once. I know that it's confirmation bias, right? Because if you feel and think that this is happening, then any goal that looks a little sideways, you're going to attribute it to whatever prior belief that you have. I understand that. But especially in the past 2 months or so, let's just put it this way. I think we haven't got the same breaks that the other teams have gotten to us. Like, it's not a 50-50, which you would think it would be, because it's a random event. It's a random thing.
So a couple things on that, and I appreciate exactly, like, we're irrational, we're emotional. I do track these things in my own little spreadsheet.
Ooh.
And I didn't get to, today was a super busy day at work, and I didn't get to update my little spreadsheet here. But not including the game last night, so including up to the Washington game, the first 35 games, the Jets are carrying a shooting percentage of 8.9%. Our opponents are carrying a shooting percentage of 8.8%.
Okay.
So that doesn't feel right, but it's statistically accurate. Further, the Jets are carrying, you know, expected goals for, they've been plus 50 or better for since the Buffalo game, so game 28. So the last 8 games are, like, again, not including the game last night. Against Washington, they weren't above 50%. My bad. But they've been carrying the bulk of high danger chances for, expected goals for. They've been very good in the last 6 games, carrying
plus 50%
on expected goals. Mm-hmm. The high danger chances have also been good, plus 50 or better, with the exception of the Washington game.
Paul
Maurice got fired or left. The Washington game had 29 high danger chances between the two teams. So very high event hockey. And you know, I think that's good for the Jets. And I do think that, you know, since Paul Maurice has left, you know, our high danger chances have gone up.
That was one of the things I had in the article, is that there has been a very loud and steady push throughout the Jets organization to get more bodies in front of the net, which I think is very valid. And I think that has manifested itself. You can see there's a concerted effort anytime we're in the offensive zone to do that. And I think that has resulted in what you're saying, right? In some of the higher danger chances, opportunities, and the statistics kind of bear that out.
And just to finish on the number stuff, which I have my dad is an older guy. I had him over for dinner on Wednesday night, and oh boy, does he hate the stats. Oh boy, does he hate the stats.
Really? I wouldn't have thought that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So, but I am looking here, even strength. So this is all even strength opportunities, 5-on-5, 4-on-4. We're 29th in the league in high danger shooting percentage. And on the power play, high danger shooting percentage, we're 18th. So we aren't really finishing like we have been in the past. We're on the bottom half or near the bottom in finishing from the high danger areas. Now, what we are quite good at is saving. So a lot of credit goes to Hellebuck.
Yeah.
We're very good at saving it from the high danger areas, with the exception of the penalty kill, where we're quite horrendous. In fact, we're 30th in the league in high danger save percentage. But listen, you got to take a little bit of the bad. Yeah, exactly. And I have no beefs with Hellebuck. Didn't play well in Nashville.
Nope.
That happens.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Had a good, you know, it was interesting.
I thought they were going to pull him after the first, but kudos, I guess.
Well, you know, the fact that maybe if it was Comrie, they would have.
Yeah, fair enough.
With the kid up, maybe they don't. You know, the thing is with the Capitals game, I think there was a strong push by the Capitals, but the Jets were able to kind of recalibrate and be the better team or as good in the back half of the game. And then against, and we've talked about this a little bit before, Nashville came out and set such a high bar for speed and effort and tenaciousness, and the Jets weren't able to match it immediately, but they adjusted their game.
They did. And they finished over well.
They finished well.
Yeah.
I think at one point the shots in the third period were 15-3 for the Jets. And, you know, so did Nashville just quit, or did the, I think the Jets, they, and this goes back to what we talked about Pomo and the lasting implications of his reign, if we want to call it that, is that these guys have been taught a brand of hockey which is very slow and prodding and stationary. And when they get against these high energy teams, whether it be Carolina or Minnesota or in this case Nashville, mm-hmm. they're very much reactionary. They're not proactive. They're reactionary, and they're like, oh my God, this team's trying.
Yeah.
Who told, like, I think we were going back on our little group chat going like, what did they not get a scouting report on this team?
We got punched in the mouth and literally, like, Stanley got punched in the mouth, and that set the tone. And you could just see we were just stunned. And I mean, if we're gonna extract a grain of silver lining out of this, is we finished very well. I think part of that, however, is I think Nashville's game plan, I think they shut it down to a certain extent. I think they took their foot off the gas, but we didn't have any quit on us. It's just, you can't go down 3-0 to a team like Nashville. Like, the game was over. We were, like you say, on our group chat, there was 6-0, and, you know, we were spending more time having fun than we were actually watching the game, because the game was ostensibly done.
I don't know if you know this about me, Mike, but I tend to be very reactionary and emotional.
No.
Especially during the game. Yeah. So in the first 2 minutes when I called 6-0,
yeah,
this is going to be a 6-0 Nashville win.
That's Vaughn's go-to, by the way. Anytime we get down by more than two in the first, Vaughn's next post is 6-0. We're losing.
I promise I don't yell at my family during the, like.
Good for you.
Silence! Silence!
Everybody, I'm clear watching out.
The game! I don't care about your homework. It's your problem.
The one other issue that I wanted to get your thoughts on, it's our bottom six. Now, I understand that with Wheeler out and Stastny out and now Ehlers out, that we have some folks in there that obviously aren't full-time regular NHL players, but the Toninatos and the Vesalainens, and even to extent, and I said, and I've been very vocal about, I'm not going to say anything bad about Lowry, but we kind of have to.
Yeah.
For two reasons. The first being that his dad seems to play him a lot. He was out on the 6-on-5 in the Nashville game. And I get it, we're sort of low on top-end scores. But having him and Dubois sitting in front of the net together seems like wasted resources. And those other two guys, and even Harkins to a certain extent, he'll show some flashes of speed. But we just don't... when we're depleted from a roster perspective, those guys haven't shown anything in the past few weeks, in the past few months, and you need contributions from your third and fourth line. And Dave Lowry does the same thing that Paul Maurice does. When things aren't going well, we won't get four lines rolling. We're just going to cut one of the lines out, and then we'll put them out for 30 ineffective seconds because they've literally cold. They've been sitting on the bench for 10 minutes. And I understand, you know, help is on the way, figuratively, I guess, with Wheeler coming back. But that's another problem. Is that playoffs or not, you can't run two lines, especially when you're shorthanded. And I feel that's been a sore spot for the Jets here in the past month or so.
You know, this is one of those times where I really wish I had a better global or
right. I know what you're saying.
Sense of what happens with other teams, right? We're so focused on our roster. And what it has and doesn't have. I don't know the extent to which other teams go through something similar and are either successful or have challenges, right? I completely agree. The bottom six lately has been completely underwhelming. But at the same time, I really look at that group as stopgap measures. We've between COVID and injuries, we've
been hit
relatively hard on that. I think that when healthy, we have a really good top nine, and our bottom three are our bottom three. You know, You get a couple injuries to your top nine and a COVID, and then you have a top six, and then you know you have a crazy Russian knee your best player right in front of the referee, and nothing happens because that's fine, and then you barely four NHL level forwards. I mean, we go through this all the time in football. Your depth chart looks pretty good, and then it doesn't take much for it to change fundamentally. I think the Jets need to work through that. And but, you know, you're right. I don't know if there's an easy answer to it, other than, you know, making trades, which are really hard to do, which are really, you know, you want to get something. You have to give something up to get something in return. So are we really moving ahead? You know, I guess we could trade draft picks or prospects for now players.
Yeah.
But then you're just, you know, trading the future into the present. So I agree. The bottom six have been truly underwhelming. But, you know, I really don't know. I mean, that's our defense. Like, we've talked about the depth of our defense. They need to step up. We have one of the best goalies in the league. He needs to step up.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, everyone's not a little bit carrying enough of their weight. I don't think that's one thing with the Jets, is that you can be critical of everyone a little bit. And when you're able to be critical of everyone a little bit, and not just the normal stuff, right? Like, listen, like, everyone's kind of underperforming. Well, that adds up when you add it up across your roster. And then all of a sudden, we're looking up above us in the standings, and it doesn't look good. Like, that's one thing we haven't touched upon. We've been talking about the play of the Winnipeg Jets.
No, you're right.
In the micro sense, we take a look at where we are in the standings. We have a tall order in front of us in the coming
Logan Stanley-esque order.
Yes.
See what I did there?
Yes, I did, because his main and primary attribute is height.
Well, why don't we go to the pre-boarding announcements, because
sure.
I've got an open discussion with one of my choices that I would really, I'm not doing it to troll. So we'll have that discussion. So why don't you kick us off with the first class?
Okay, first class assignment. Brought to you by First Mining Gold, providing first-class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. I'll quickly go first.
Sure.
Who do I want to move up into first class? Well, you know, I think we're going to be on the same page here. I'm putting, you know, it's Cole Perfetti.
Oh, yeah!
He is very clearly an NHL player.
Thank you, Vaughn.
Small sample size, you know, whatever. He is an NHL player. He deserves to play in our top nine. And if six other guys are playing so good that he needs to be on the third line, then fine. Right?
Right.
That
guy, he'll get there. He'll get.
He is an NHL player. Maybe he'll bring a little spark to the third line or whatever the case may be. Cole Perfetti, you have paid your dues. You have done what you can do in junior hockey. You've done everything you can do for the junior team that is within your control.
Yeah.
You've spent time in the AHL. You've dominated the AHL in two different seasons. You've paid your dues. Welcome to the NHL. Bring your pillow. Bring your you know, stuffy. Bring it up to first class. And, you know, put your feet up. We'll get you some nice food. We'll get you some sparkling grape juice, and you can enjoy your flight in first class. So I'm moving Cole Perfetti. I want to give an honorable mention to Josh Morrissey, because
right, he had a great game in Nashville.
Oh, was that incredible. A great game in that? Just play like that every night, man.
It will be great.
It will be really, really good. So honorable mention to Josh Morrissey, but Cole Perfetti. But I want to hear your first class assignment and why.
We're doubling down. Double down, Trent.
Who's the big winner here tonight at the casino? Huh? Mikey, that's who. Mikey's the big winner.
It was sort of a no-brainer for me. I'm obviously a little more wildly reactionary with my likes and dislikes. And again, you're absolutely right. He's got great vision. You can see that already. His passing, I think, you know, rookie mistakes. He'll see things sometimes, I think, a half second too late, but you can see the process is there. I think he's got to work on his speed a little, especially if he's going to play with Connor. You can see he struggles a bit at the end of shifts, but he's a fantastic playmaker, and he makes really smart hockey plays. Like, you can, he sees the game well, and even little things, like I am watching him in the defensive end. You know, he's obviously, we didn't pick him in the first round for his defensive prowess, but he'll make really good decisions and cheat and sag, and he's good with his stick. And so I'm very encouraged by the play, you know, again, in the one, whatever it is, the two, three games. I think he was a bit overwhelmed in Nashville, but I think he got his sea legs under him, and I'm super excited. And I tweeted out, I'm getting a Perfetti jersey. I love his game. It's very cerebral, and we need more cerebral, I think, in terms of some of the offensive prowess that sort of fades in and out. So he is also my upgrade to first class. And it's perfect because I was going between him and Josh Morrissey, because the game that Morrissey played in Nashville, I thought warranted just for that, because that's the best game I've ever seen him play. So whatever Wheaties he ate, keep it up, because that was fantastic.
It was. It was. And, you know, I think back on Perfetti, that little, it didn't end up as a goal, but that little toe drag, just that.
Yeah. Good call.
It just was a demonstration of confidence and self-awareness that is like, listen, if he's doing that this early in his tenure as an NHL player, it bodes really well.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to the penalty box, I have good news, Mike. Last episode, we talked about my efforts to secure a sponsorship
for
the penalty box, and I've been able to do that. And it's with Bad Boys Bail Bondsman. Their motto is, if you skip town, we'll track you down. Getting scofflaws back in the box since 1997. So Bad Boys Bail Bondsman is our penalty box sponsor. Mike, who are you putting in the penalty box?
Okay, Vaughn, you know, we're good friends. I promise you. I'm not doing this to troll you. I want to have a legitimate conversation about Mark Scheifele. Because let me start with a bit of history, is that you were right and I was wrong on Mark Scheifele as a prospect. Do you remember that, when his first few years? And you have always been all in with him, and I was not. He had a bit of a Bambi on ice feel to him for the, you know, a good portion of his first years, and I wasn't sure that was easily correctable. And to Mark's credit, what did he do? He worked at it, and he worked at his strength and his conditioning. And now, in my humble opinion, I think he's probably one of the best NHL forwards with the puck in tight spaces. He's a magician, and he sees the ice well. He's got a great shot. So all in all, Mark Scheifele is very talented, which baffles me to the point why he doesn't seem to give a monkey shit about playing defense, and that there are huge swaths of the game. And again, that I see where, you know, the two goals in Nashville, the first one especially, he watched, and I forget who it was who scored, but like, take two whacks at it, and they went up, they were down 1-0. And it's not infrequent where, you know, and Murat wrote that beautiful article outlining some of the, defensive deficiencies. And we've talked about it, but I know that you are a super fan, and rightfully so. Mark Scheifele's got a lot of talent. But the way I envision it is that Mark Scheifele has been, up until this year, what's now Kyle Connor, our best player outside of Hellebuck. And I question to a certain extent what sort of leadership qualities and capabilities he has, if it's clear, and I don't know how it couldn't be, to everyone that a good portion of time he just doesn't seem to give a shit out there. And again, I don't know if you see that or think that or feel that, but the Nashville game is really frustrating, and I really like Mark Scheifele as a hockey player. It's all the talent that's built in there. That's what's so frustrating to me, is that it's this one aspect of the game that I think holds him back from being a truly great player, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Well, I think there's a lot of validity to what you're saying, and I do think that, you know, when you look at a guy like Mark Scheifele, you know, you don't want to, get the great to undermine the good. If Mark Scheifele is our biggest problem, we're doing just fine. That isn't to say that his inattention to detail in the defensive zone isn't a concern, but he brings far more to the table than I think he hurts us. Now, the broader question is the combination of Scheifele and Wheeler has been very, very, like, meh, right? I read somewhere today that they're either, over the last four or five seasons, they're either like plus five or minus five or something like that in goals on the ice, like actual goals.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that, and again, I hope there will be a day where we don't have to mention Paul Maurice on this podcast. But those Amen. Things with, like, if you allow it, you coach it. Okay, that's what we talk about all the time in football. If you allow it, you coach it. This type of activity, lack of attention to detail in the defensive zone, has been allowed to persist for a period of time. And therefore, the feedback given to Mark Scheifele, whether it has been explicit or implicit, has been what you're doing is fine, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I absolutely question whether he's ever been held to account for his play in the defensive zone, because I don't think that to be the case. I don't know if ever Scheifele or Wheeler have been held to account for their play in any way, in any way at all. There was a quote today or recently coming from Blake Wheeler, said he really appreciated
how I saw that.
Maurice didn't treat him like a chess piece on the board.
Yeah, it felt like a treated family him like or whatever. A
person.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? He was treating you like that, but he was treating other people like chess pieces on the board, right? You were just simply his favorite. And that was that to me spoke volumes.
Yeah.
Not a lack of self-awareness, that a sense of entitlement. So this isn't to say I'm excusing Mark Scheifele. I will go back and say that, you know, if Mark Scheifele is our biggest problem, then we don't have big problems. Our biggest problems, I think, lie elsewhere.
Yeah.
But I acknowledge his faults, and I just think that he is a phenomenal player. I think that when he's no longer a Winnipeg Jet, we will think back on his time very fondly and
That's
wonder
fair
why and be angry with who's ever there at the time trying to fill his role and questioning why he isn't doing things like
Scheifele
used to do, which will be all confirmation bias and all those types of things. So,
okay, well, I appreciate that. So who you got?
You know, I struggled with this one, because there were several very worthy candidates, but at the risk of being utterly obvious, I couldn't get past it once again being our tall friend, Logan Stanley.
Good for you.
It is just a train wreck out there.
He's awful.
Listen, he gets beat up. He's not physical. He can't move the puck. He is immobile in the defensive zone. He can't execute a simple switch. In the Washington game, like, the first goal by Ovechkin was a simple switch.
Yeah.
Right? This is peewee hockey
and he
stuff.
Did, yeah, there was a gif on it, and he just couldn't have been more wide open. And I was like, oh, is that Stanley? Yep, that's Stanley.
Yeah. So partly, again, if he's not being held account to that, is it really his fault? Like this,
yeah.
this Lowry is like, I'm concerned because he's done certain things. He's picked the low hanging fruit, right? They did talk about this on the broadcast about the penalty kill, and they've since going back into when Maurice is still around, the Seattle game,
mm-hmm.
which is game 26, there has been only two games in which they've allowed goals on the penalty kill. They allowed one goal against Buffalo.
Yeah.
And then there was the debacle against Colorado.
Yeah, there's three.
Colorado went 3-for-4.
Yeah.
And I didn't update my stats. I think they shut them out again last night. For all the probs, I don't think Nashville got a power play goal.
No, so I don't think they did either.
They've really fixed. It seems like there's enough evidence to suggest they fixed the penalty kill. The power play is still very decent. You know, the 5-on-5 play has the stats have gone.
Stats
down
have yeah, been favorable,
but have been good. But at the same time, you know, he's made these very, very Lowry, I'm talking about now, head coach Lowry,
mm-hmm.
has been made, continued to make very, very Paul Maurice type decisions. Like, whatever you do, Logan Stanley, it's okay. You're not coming out of the lineup. You know, whatever you do, Blake Wheeler,
you're going back with Scheifele.
You're going back with Scheifele.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a number of those things that, you know, continue to persist within the Jets roster, which, you know, is very confusing.
Yeah, and I heard, and I don't know if this is true at all, but that they're still, Lowry and Maurice are still in contact regularly. And the inference there was that basically, not a puppet master, but that Lowry still is very much really? Leaning on Maurice's thoughts and opinions on various decisions as part of his new head coaching responsibilities. Really? I have absolutely no, you know, this was several non-news feeds that I saw this, so whether that's true or not, but it's the only possible explanation, because it seemed, you know, other than the fact that he learned a lot from Maurice and is just regurgitating what Maurice did, but it was interesting to me where I was like, well, I mean, that could very well be happening.
Well, I'm at a loss. I mean, I don't know how you would listen to Paul Maurice and then look at what actually is the outcome on the ice and say, this guy has all the answers. I don't get it. Don't get it.
No, I agree.
That is very, very disconcerting. I mean, I think if he's doing that, it's a clear indication that he doesn't want to be the coach next year. Like, we need a different voice in there. I mean, it is valid to say at some point you just need a different voice. It happens all the time across numerous sports.
Yeah.
It happens in football, it's it happens not in soccer. Sometimes you just need a different voice. You know, and you know, they're getting the same message. Like, and by different voice I mean different message. Like different context, different structure, different
culture. Try something new.
If you're just giving the same, like, if it is just a puppet master situation, you're getting the same message delivered through a different voice. Man, I mean, I'm actually getting to the point that, and I'm not blaming, like, we can get into this in a subsequent podcast. I actually hold Chevy in high regard. I think the players are fine. This may be a lost season. Like, and with all the COVID stuffs, the disruptions in the schedule, the integration of different players. I think we're in the midst, and I've been trying to get to this. I want to write an article for the Faceoff Hockey Network website that talks about the Jets needing to go through a roster overhaul or retooling. Not that we have to bring in a whole bunch of new players, but we're seeing fundamental shifts within the roster on roles and responsibilities. For example, needing to move down the Blake Wheelers of the world in terms of responsibilities and roles, and moving up even more Kyle Connor,
Nick Ehlers, yeah,
integrating Cole Perfetti, bringing up Dylan Sandberg, bringing into Ville Heinola, like a really retooling. Even it's the same players, right? But really changing the roles and responsibilities amongst those players, I think that's a massive undertaking that I think Paul Maurice had wanted nothing to do with, which is why he skipped town, right?
Yeah.
I think that we're in the midst of that, and we may not be able to bear the fruit of that until next season. I mean, there's still a lot of hockey to be played. I'm just I'm just saying I'm at the initial stages of flirting with the idea that this may be a lost season towards something.
Yeah, let's just try some stuff
next year. Yeah.
Yeah. So on that note, I'm going to we do have a new sponsor, so I'll go through that. And are we going to embarrass ourselves with some music takes?
Oh, let's do it. Let's do it. I'm ready. Well, by that you mean me. But I'm ready to, okay, we'll do the new sponsor.
Sure.
We'll do the music take. We'll do a quick look ahead and then we'll get out.
Okay. Hey everyone, we have a brand new partner that we're absolutely pumped about. Symbol is the stock market for sports that allows you to profit off your sports knowledge. On Symbol, you can trade sports teams like stocks, including hockey. And every time your teams win, you earn cash. Use your sports knowledge on Symbol to buy low, sell high, and earn cash payouts when your teams win. Join the 8,000-plus early adopters who have started to invest in their favorite teams. Visit www.symbol.com to create an account where, when you deposit, make sure to use the promo code THEFHN for a money-back guarantee. You heard that right. Symbol is offering a money-back guarantee to all our listeners. That money-back guarantee means that even if you lose money in the first 90 days, Symbol will refund your initial deposit, no questions asked. Visit Symbol.com and use the promo code THEFHN, and your deposit will have a money-back guarantee up to $500. Join Symbol and start investing and profiting from your favorite teams.
That's cool.
Pretty cool, eh?
FHN has done such a great job to expand their brand. I don't know what they're doing with us, you know, but we're happy to be a part of it.
We're dragging them down like we do.
The one question I have, Mike, is how do you spell symbol? Because it's a little bit different, right? So if I'm
typing
symbol into Google,
S-I-M-B-U-L-L. So it's like Sims the game. S-I-M-B-U-L-L. Good call, Vaughn.
Nice. Okay, let's. That is cool. Let's move on to music.
Set us up, bud.
Super important.
Yeah.
Okay, so I came across this thing on Twitter the other day, and it was like, all right, so what is the greatest song ever made by someone from British Columbia? And I think this could be true of all of Canada, but the top two songs were Home for a Rest by Spirit of the West,
mm-hmm.
or Call Me Maybe by, oh crap, what's her name?
Carly Rae?
Carly Rae Jepsen.
Yeah.
Carly Rae Jepsen. So I put this question to Mike, we need to have this on the podcast. Carly Rae Jepsen or Spirit of the West, you got to pick one. What is the greatest song? This is someone else's came to this. I don't know how they got to these two songs.
Yeah, neither do I, but I like it.
I don't know. But anyways, those were the last two songs. So you have to choose, Mike.
Yeah.
Call Me Maybe by Carly Rae Jepsen or Home for a Rest by Spirit of the West. Go. You got to choose one.
I'm going hands down Home for a Rest. Ugh. It was obviously a bit of an anthem growing up. The other aspect of this is, you know, Call Me Maybe was obviously a huge, huge hit. It was back in 2012. And Vaughn, you might not, you know this, but I was not always this suave, sophisticated Lothario that I am now. And no, I remember being somewhat lonely at the time. I was not in a good space. And this song was on the radio at all times. And I don't know why I associate this song with a kind of a low point in my life. But every time I hear it, I want to throw my radio out of the car. And so it had that working against it. But Home for a Rest is, you know, some of my boys, Craig and Brett and Steve and those guys. This was sort of a, you know, this was a pick me up. It was ubiquitous throughout our 20s and 30s. And so for me, it's an easy pick.
Well, it is a very good selection. And I love Spirit of the West. I love Home for a Rest. It is a fantastic song. D for Democracy. I have a whole bunch of Spirit of the West CDs. A big part of my life in university days was Spirit of the West. I remember working security at a Commerce Social and watching 1,000, 1,200 people just jump up and down to Spirit of the West, which was the last song of the night. It was a really cool thing as a non-participant in the evening, as someone who was, you know, tragically sober and working the event.
Yeah, Vaughn was a bouncer, by the way, for anybody who wasn't aware.
Yeah, don't get in my face. It is an iconic song, and I have a ton of love for that song. But Call Me, there are few songs. There may be no other song in the world that makes me more happy, more instantly than Call Me Maybe.
Holy
cow. As a longtime self loather, I don't know if I can pick out one time in my life that was worse than the other. So I've always kind of hated myself. So just to bring that song into my life at a particular moment took me away from who I was, which was boring and pathetic.
Oh, get out of here, buddy.
I know. I'm having it up a little bit. But I love that song. You know, if I'm toying with having a playlist on Spotify that is called Songs I Love But I Shouldn't, that would
there
be
you
the
go.
Number one song.
Good for you.
I absolutely love that song. I Shouldn't. It goes against every other playlist you would see in my Spotify playlist. You'd be like, what is this song? Why is this guy even talking about this song?
Yeah, because you're a bit of a music head and a good one, right? You and my brother and you guys are music connoisseurs. So when you said that your choice was Call Me Maybe, I was admittedly taken back. The other thing, have you watched the video for this song?
Call Me Maybe?
Yeah. Please do that.
I will. I don't think I've seen it too often. It's the type of thing that just either comes on the radio or I hear it in a weird spot and I'm just like, oh, this is the best. Crank this up. A
lot of shirtless dudes. The second part of it is that, and so this is official and rightfully so, but you've had sort of the gall and nay the temerity to poke fun at my boy band exit song selections. So I think we're even now. I'm calling it.
No. I don't think Carly Rae Jepsen is a genius.
Yes, because her subsequent hits have all been.
Fair enough. So we're going to agree to disagree. We're going to meet in the middle and consider that you're wrong. And all right. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Everyone knows now you have good taste in music and my taste is very questionable, but you know, let's take a look. Let's take a minute. You know, we're recording on a Friday night, Friday, January 21st. The Jets are playing tomorrow at 2 p.m. in Boston, which will be interesting.
Interesting.
I can't figure out Boston this year. I don't know if they're good or bad. They play.
I think Marshawn's hurt.
That's right.
Yeah.
Shoulder.
Yeah.
They play less than 24 hours later on Sunday in Pittsburgh. And then back for two home games in which I would like to tell everyone how screwed over Mike is getting on these two games because of our season ticket holders. We have three seats per game. And Mike had all three seats for the game on the 25th, which is against Florida.
Sure did.
And the game on the 27th against Vancouver. So the only one getting screwed up here in our group is Mike because all the other games
I wouldn't have it any other way,
Vaughn. That were postponed are just getting moved into February, the otherwise Olympic break. So I'm going to reap all of my tickets at some point. Only Mike gets screwed over. Those are three or four, pardon me, good teams.
Yeah.
Vancouver, which may or may not be a good team, is playing very well. Florida, which may or may not be a good team, have played like 75% of their games so far at home.
Yeah.
And apparently they're terrible on the road, so we'll see what they bring.
Well, Kodak Black likes them.
Oh, Kodak. Listen, it was a contact lens. She dropped a contact lens on the floor. He was helping her.
Google that, kids. Google it.
Contact lens. Anyway, so if in case we don't get another podcast in on Saturday the 29th, so a week tomorrow, the Jets play in St. Louis. So we could have, you know, we've been operating on three games between podcasts. There may be five to talk about before the next one. But some tough teams coming up. The Jets have been all over the place. I don't know what to expect out of this. Probably some chaos.
Yeah.
Probably some unexpectedness. So I'm going to go 2-2-1. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah. Wow. We are in sync today. That's what I had written down. 2-2-1. I think our record is indicative of our play is that we're not a playoff team. We're not playing like it consistently. We have stretches and spurts where we look great. And as long as, and we've been consistently inconsistent all year, and I don't expect that to change in the next five games. And so to me, 2-2-1 is a very apt prognostication on this, because we'll win some games that we probably shouldn't and lose some games that we should have won.
So it's I think what we're it's tough to pin down, like, this game is going to be this.
Right. That's exactly
it. Going to be that.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think there's a good chance we win the two home games. We lose two games on the road, and somewhere within those three road games, we push one of those into extra time. And then it's a coin flip from there, whether we win or lose. We haven't been great in overtime. With Ehlers out, that's a further challenge for the overtime period. But, you know, it's not a great projection, because the Jets need to start making ground to gain on the teams that are ahead of them in their division in order to make the playoffs. So, yeah, it's going to be tough, but let's see. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not optimistic, but I don't know what to say.
Maybe we'll catch a polar vortex, whatever that means.
Exactly. Winter is coming.
All right.
Winter is coming.
Do you want to take us out?
So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge, the official Face-Off Hockey Network podcast for the Winnipeg Jets. Check us out on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, on the interweb at thefhn.net, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, Podcasts. I forget the other one we're on. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets go.
Call me maybe.